think we went through a learning process about 3 years ago where a lot of our intuition was still based on assuming our customer was this 50-person startup, when in fact they were no longer that. And so then a lot of my job became educating the product development organization how that's different.
Are we recording?
Oh my God. Better Product, the only show that takes a behind-the-scenes look into how digital products are created,
the businesses built around them, and how you too can innovate better product. I'm Christian.
I'm Anna.
Welcome to today's show. There is nothing quite like those early days of product success. Seeing your vision come to life as customers begin to adopt your service is not only validating, it can lead to new opportunities to scale and grow.
Of course, scaling has its own challenges. For example, what happens when you wake up and realize your target customer has changed? How do you move your product up market, targeting a completely new audience while maintaining the customers you already have? Today's guest has a lot of insight into the subject, well, because he's lived it.
We spoke with Justin Bauer, VP of Product at Amplitude, which helps people use customer data to build great product experiences that convert and retain users. When Justin joined Amplitude, he was the perfect fit for the company as it began to grow.
I joined Amplitude a little over 4 years ago, so back when we were a pretty small company, only 20 people at the time. And I joined because I was really passionate about the mission and vision of the company. They, the founders, Spencer, Curtis, and Jeffrey, really believed that there was going to be a new way for product teams to really be successful in the marketplace, and that many teams lacked access to the data they needed to be successful. And I had experienced that myself, having previously run a gaming company. And analytics was the lifeblood of basically many of the decisions that we made. And we struggled with many of the out-of-the-box tools that existed at the time.
Justin lives and breathes analytics.
I mean, wouldn't you also call yourself an analytical person?
Oh, God.
Well, sorry, that was bad.
That's
or great.
No, it was bad.
Oh,
you were okay. Right. Yep, trust your instincts. So anyway, with the nature of fast-moving startups, data is extremely valuable, and Justin set out to help Amplitude be the go-to analytical resource for new products.
For those of us that I think were, you know, fast-moving startups, we got that. Yeah, the way you build product was that build, measure, learn cycle. And it wasn't go and just ask people what you should build and then go build it for them. And to do that, you're going to need analytics. And so I think we felt a lot of conviction that that was going to be the future of how product would be built.
Before he knew it, Amplitude wasn't just serving startups. They were serving enterprise companies. And when that leap happened, it changed how they thought about everything, from who their target customer was to how they served their customers and the services they provided.
So what would Amplitude look like in the future? And what would they have to build to make that future a reality?
Rallying around what's winning going to look like for us 6 to 12 months from now. And we decided that we wanted to be known as the company that will help you understand and improve retention. And so that was our thematic goal, which then allowed us to then start to think about what are some of the solutions that we could build to actually help make that happen.
So how did they do it? You'll learn today. Justin shares how that upmarket move actually happened and what he and his team learned in the process. What was your role and your team's role as you figured out what market to go after, established that this was the vision of the founders, and then what was the next step to go analyze these wins and losses, and whose responsibility was that?
It ultimately is a shared responsibility. And when you're small, it like you just need to make sure it happens. And a lot of times, actually being the first product person in a company, that's kind of your job, mm-hmm. just to make sure all the things happen. And if no one's doing it, then you do it or you encourage somebody else to do it. One thing that is really important to me, though, is that in B2B, this concept of build what you sell, sell what you build, like these things need to be highly aligned. And so working really closely with your sales counterpart to ensure that how we are talking about the product and our go-to-market motion is highly aligned with how we're building the product and the direction that we're going there. And so that was also one of the first things I needed to do when I came in was work really closely with the sales organization. I mean, shouldn't even say organization, there are five people, but work with that team at the time to make sure that that was really tight.
So why is that important to build what it sounds obvious to build what you sell and sell what you build, but talk a little bit more about why that was such a focus.
It can be really easy for those two orgs to start to drift, especially as you get larger. where one example of that can be you'll have sales selling way ahead of actually what your capabilities are. Luckily, that has never been a problem here at Amplitude because I think we've been really tight on what it is that we build, and also because we've built a great product. And so you don't have to have salespeople like overstretching. But another example of that is over time, like we have expanded our capabilities and our focus and making sure that sales actually knows how to talk to those people, that you're helping train them up on that or talk about some of the new capabilities that you have. Because if they're not selling some of the capabilities that you're building and you're an enterprise, then you won't find success. And so I think that's why those things just need to be really tight and those leaders need to be close to it.
So when you started there and you did this research to figure out who the core customer was, were you facing problems when you started? Meaning when you started, was your charter sort of like, we're seeing these problems that we need to fix? Or was it things were working and you needed focus and scale?
I think it was the latter. I think things were working, but it was about how do we accelerate that growth? I think we'd built an early version of the product that was finding success with a core set of customers, but focus was starting to become a problem as I think at the time, maybe the company had 30 customers. With 30 customers, I think, yeah, you can actually literally review every single customer request. You can go and meet with everyone on the sales team. But as we start to grow rapidly, you start to get requests that maybe don't actually fit the strategy. And as we added more engineers, like what's our process of actually building? Like we didn't have any concept of sprints or anything like that. And so a big part of my job was also bringing in some of that rigor mm-hmm. to ensure that we could scale.
As a product person, I'm curious how much you built the product that you wanted to have in your previous life, as opposed to how you balance that with customer kind of requests.
So in the beginning, they were highly aligned. Because I did happen to be the target customer. Like I had previously run a gaming company, early stage startup, and that's who we were going after. And that was, I think, fun. And I think also a reason why I was brought into the company, because I had a really strong conviction understanding the problem. And also, I think just you find that commonly a reason why startups are successful, the concept of like founder market fit, where most successful startups actually had founders who really felt the problem or were actually the customer in the beginning. And so I do think that was why we were able to find early success. However, as you scale, that can become a challenge and potentially even something that prohibits you from growing. Because today, I actually am not the target customer. In fact, most of the time, we're now serving enterprise companies. They have much larger teams. And I think we went through a learning process about 3 years ago, where a lot of our intuition was still based on assuming our customer was this 50-person startup, when in fact they were no longer that. And so then a lot of my job became educating the product development organization as to how that's different. What are these new problems that we had never really thought of before to kind of rebuild that intuition to make sure that we weren't just building for ourselves?
That seems like a hard sort of reality to grasp, I would imagine. You said it very professionally, but I'm imagining if I was sitting there thinking, this is the way that I think we should do it, it's been working, we're not going to change for these new customers. How did you handle that transition, or was it as seamless as you just made it sound?
No, it definitely wasn't as seamless as I made it sound. And it took time, and it was a lot of repeating myself and making sure that we brought customers in that looked very different. And so, yeah, there was a lot that I think we did through that. And I would say one of the things that we did that was important was as a leadership group, we aligned around that being a key part of the strategy. And so the company, by the time we decided to go after enterprise, the company was a little bit bigger. We could no longer have everyone in the same room, but we did meet as a leadership group and with key influential people in the company and talked about like, do we think we can go after the enterprise? And when we decided yes, that was something that was like, okay, this is a big strategy for us as a company. We're going to need to rethink how we do things. That alone wouldn't have been enough because then we still would go back to intuition. Mm-hmm. But at least we had that like, oh, remember, it's enterprise. Like, is Atlassian or Intuit like going to be seeing that same problem that this tiny startup that has five people seeing? No. And I think through over time, a lot of repetition of repeating, then we were eventually able to develop that intuition.
What did it look like, that shift into a new potential market or moving upstream? Were you, how did that shift happen? Was it deciding we're going to go up market? Were you starting to drive? Were you getting inbound people from larger companies inquiring? What was the sort of, I guess, inflection point that sort of drove that shift up market?
So it was a combination of all of that. So it was, one, an understanding that we did believe eventually that we were going to serve enterprise, but we didn't know when. And then it was that when, not if question, a very common kind of question in product, was then like getting a sense of market trends. So the fact that we started to get a little bit more inbound coming from enterprise. I think Intuit actually was one of our first enterprise companies. And then we actually didn't have one sign for maybe 6 months after that. And then we started to get two or three sign. And like you started to observe that actually we're getting a lot more demand here. Should we refocus as a company? And so I think it was a combination of all of that that led us to that intuition.
How did it feel to kind of, at a company level, to move up market? Do you feel like you were kind of moving like away from your kind of initial group that kind of got you started? Or what was that process like?
It was a big shift for us. We had to rethink almost everything that we do as a company. I can't imagine trying to do that as a much larger company. I mean, like I said, at the time, maybe we were 60 people. And even with that, it was a lot of work because, like I said, one, many of us didn't have intuition for that because we'd never worked at those larger companies. Obviously, the go-to-market motion is very different. And so longer lead cycles, like we had one of our operating principles is velocity. That becomes a lot harder to do in enterprise sales. And then, like I said, on the product side, it was like, well, we found so much success with product, with these small, fast-moving startups. Like, why are we doing this? And something that I think we talked about, which was really important, was we still believe that we should be serving startups. And the reason for that was they're the ones that are basically the cutting edge of product development. And these enterprise companies, they want to actually learn from startups. And so it wasn't a startups no longer matter to us. It was, no, what we're saying is enterprise now also matters. And the startups, we still want to make sure we're building a cutting edge product. They're going to be a key partner for us to do that. But then we need to think about how do we bring that to the enterprise? And that ends up being different solutions than if you're just building for startups.
I think that'd be really interesting to dive into because... Yeah, I mean, usually you're worried about like your favorite indie band and you hear them on the radio and you're like, oh man, they sold out. But sounds like you've handled it pretty well. But I'm curious then, how do you balance the Amplitude product that is for startups and then for enterprise? That is a marketing, messaging, positioning, and packaging exercise. But from your perspective, it sounds like you're going deeper. You're taking what you're learning from startups and applying it to a broader product set. Can you talk, is there any sort of specifics we can dive into to understand how you actually will take, it's almost like a labs approach, it sounds like, or something where you're almost taking what the startups are doing and rolling it into the product and communicating it outward. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So it can be a challenge sometimes, but I think it comes back to like, we know we're going to win on innovation. And it is critical for us to have the leading product. And so that means that we will always be investing energy and resources on building and experimenting around new ways to do analytics, specifically around product. And therefore, not everything we build might be ready for the enterprise. And that's just like an assumption, I think, to everyone here. So people understand that. And a core part of our roadmap will always be focused on that. And some of those things actually we'll bring to the enterprise, and some of them actually we won't, and that's okay. That's just part of how we make sure that we're always cutting edge.
How do you figure out whether something is ready for the enterprise?
You start to test it with people within the enterprise and understand what adoption looks like. And a big piece of that can be like, it's one thing to build something for a power user. It's another thing to build something that's more applicably used across many people. Enterprise may not have as sophisticated of users. And so we might start with building something specifically for a power user. We'll learn really quickly with them. And then we might have to rethink even the whole experience to bring that to the enterprise. We have examples of that going on, I think, all the time. And I do think sometimes people who are building for enterprise will fail and think that everything they have to start with how might this get adopted at a 1,000-person company or a 10,000-person company. That may not be the case. Some things, yes, that makes sense because you're literally solving a problem that only matters for a 10,000-person company. But other times, you can actually learn really quickly by working with a couple power users and then make sure that that actually is a problem to be solving and an important solution to build, and then tackle how do we actually take this and get this into the hands of many more people.
Well, so you've mentioned intuition a lot. You've said kind of you had this customer intuition, it changed to the enterprise. It sounds like it's an important kind of aspect of how you think about product. Can you talk to me a little bit more about what you mean by intuition?
Yeah, so I kind of have a belief that every great product leader or product person has this mental model of how the world works in their head. And that is their belief around what are the problems that are out there and why do people struggle to accomplish whatever the goal is that matters ultimately that your company or product serves. So your intuition comes from that mental model. It is like a belief that if we were to tackle this problem, we will find success. This solution is the right type of solution for that problem. And I think that's just critical to be having just good vision and the ability to kind of have the right discretion for what you should be doing within your product. And you need to focus a lot of energy, I think, on building that up and continuing to make sure that that mental model is accurate, which is why we do things like we spend 20% of our time talking to customers or prospects, like constantly talking, because I think that's making sure that our mental model is accurate. And then when I hear something that doesn't actually fit with that mental model, that's something I can go and dig into a bit more and try to understand that better. And sometimes I understand it better. I'm like, oh, well, that actually isn't a problem that we should be solving. That's great. Someone else's problem to solve. We don't have to solve every problem in the world. But sometimes you'll hear something and you'll actually realize that that is a problem. I wonder if other people have that problem. Let me go and talk to other folks to try to validate that. And that's how you build more of that intuition.
The challenge that I see a lot of times when we're working with clients is that in the early stages when you don't have enough, and now I'm not a scientist, and so I don't know when the critical threshold of sample size has been reached, but I imagine maybe thinking through shifting up to the enterprise, you know, how do you weave in analytics and how do you know you've got good enough data to make decisions on? You have your intuition, you have your mental models, and you built that up with startups and people like you, and then you move into a new field and some of your models get tested. Plus you may not always have the analytics to back it up because before you sign into it, you don't have the data coming from them. So how do you sort of deal with that stage and in sort of developing intuition without, you know, deep like insight from analytics?
So I think that is always the starting point. Like you are always, like you should always start by talking to customers and talking to people, understanding what their problems are. It's all about the problem statement. And then you'll build your first version of that. And when you're going to get early feedback on that, you're still not going to have data around that. It's an alpha version of the product. But then I think once you start to get into the world of having 30, 40, 50 people that you're actually using your early version of your product, I think you can start to weave in some early measures of metrics. You don't need a thing like amplitude or something super complex, but you can start to look at things like, are people using this every single day or every single week? Or like, what was our intention of how often it should be used? How many of our 50 people that we have this in the hands of are doing that? And so we do that when we build early products. Like, we'll actually look at that and say, yeah, we expect this to be used every day. Are people using it every day? No, they're not. Okay, why not? Let's go talk to them and understand why that is. And that's the kind of early part of beta. And then eventually you'll get to a part where you want to either get more users if you're an early stage startup, or you want to expose this to more users if you already have a user base. And that might be, okay, now you're at 1,000 plus types of users. At that stage, you obviously can't talk to everyone. Now you're going to start to layer in actual product metrics and measure that. And at that stage, I think is when you could start thinking about using a product like an Amplitude.
You kind of touched on this a little bit too, and maybe this is less of a data answer to this and more of maybe your personal intuition and thinking through the decisions that you've had to make along the way. How do you know when something is working and when something is not? You've been there for four years now. So I imagine you've been faced with situations where You said earlier that the sort of analytics or data can be the arbiter in terms of what's working. Well, how do you know when something's not working and what should even be done about it? Like correcting it, tweaking something, or just, you know, nixing something entirely?
I think it's hard, and it's something that we need to make sure that we're doing all the time, which is actually going back and doing retrospectives on the things that we have previously built. So we'll do things like, let's review the last 10 product bets that we've made as a team. And so we'll go through that at least once a quarter and like look at like, hey, when we created our initial one pager that measured success, like what does that actually look like for all these different bets? And I think it's important to be a harsh grader, because in the long run, we want to see things fail. It sounds counterintuitive, but that means that we were taking risk. And so something we talk a lot about is like, what's our batting average on that risk? And are we getting better at that? But we should not be batting 1,000. If we are, then we're definitely not swinging for the fences. And it takes time to be able to do that evaluation. And that is just the reality of it. If you're a company that is used every day and has millions of users, you might actually be able to learn that in a week. That's awesome. Unfortunately for us, we're not that. And so it might actually take a couple months before we can fully evaluate the effectiveness of the first version of that bet. And then we have to make a call. Do we want to double down on it? Do we feel like it's sufficient for the, it's meeting the needs that we have today and we'll let it live? Or should we actually deprecate it? It didn't meet the needs of our customers. That can be a really hard choice to make in enterprise. Because a lot of enterprise product are just, it's like, throw more features at it. And we really try to make sure that if something's not working, we'll deprecate that and be comfortable with that. And that might make a couple customers angry, because there might be a couple of them that use it. But in the long run, carrying that product debt can definitely be a burden for us.
I do have one final question for you. What does better product mean to you?
You're never done building product. So better product is the fact that you are constantly trying to understand how to improve the product experience that you're delivering. And it's all in the context of the problems that you're solving for your customer. And so every day we can make it easier, faster, cheaper for them to do, to solve the jobs that they care about. We haven't talked about jobs to be done, but that's a concept that I believe in as well. And so that's what we're striving to do every day, is to actually better solve that job for that customer. And we do that through the product experience that we're building.
It's not often that we get to talk to somebody who's building a product that serves the audience of this podcast. We talked to Peter Ombley last season, back when we had season two.
I don't remember.
I remember like it was months ago. So we talked to him, and that's a big tool we use. We've talked to people from Envision. And this time we talked to Justin Bauer, who's working on Amplitude, which is also meant to serve product teams. So that was pretty cool.
He's not only building a tool for product managers, he's a product person building a tool for product managers to be better product managers, to be more product informed. And I think that's so meta, it circles back on itself, really.
Yeah, and we've talked about the theme of sort of building a product for yourself quite a bit on this podcast. One that comes to mind is we talked to John Gilman from Clear Software when he had that idea from being a consultant and then built it around in those challenges. Justin went through those same challenges as well. But what I think was really unique was the way that he talked about intuition, because I always find, especially with a design background, that your intuition is ultimately the thing that makes you good at what you do. But I also know that it's not, you know, it's like necessarily born with it. So thinking about that is cool, because I'm not personally not a big on analytics myself, but he talks about how he uses analytics to inform intuition quite a bit.
I liked what he had to say. You know, in the beginning of Amplitude, he was the target user. So he was a good, I mean, I know founder market fit, he's not the founder, but it's like he was the perfect person to lead product there, because he was someone who would have utilized this tool and found a lot of value in it. And he talks a lot about his intuition. But I think what's important is that as Amplitude changed their target customer, he had to evolve his intuition because he had never worked in the enterprise. So I think he talks about intuition, not that, you know, he had it, he learned it, but he had to evolve it. And I think one way he talked about doing that was by spending 20% of his time with customers and prospects. So it's one thing to have the intuition, but I think having the intuition, that your intuition is not up to date and needs to be changed and needs to be pushed is, I think, a huge product skill.
Yeah, Anna, you mentioned something that's really important, which the shift from moving up market to some serving users that are not himself. One of the cool things that he mentioned doing quite a bit to do that is not just by talking to users. The other aspect was he was running experiments a lot. I think he said something like he tries to look at at 10 product bets per quarter. I really like that idea of that, because he also mentioned how if you sort of make like a certain number of bets every quarter, and then you look back on how they turned out. But he explicitly mentioned that you don't want to be batting 1,000. That would be 10 for 10 for non-baseball people, or 100%. Let's just do that. You don't want to be 100% right, because he says you wouldn't be taking enough chance. But I think that taking chances is how another way that you kind of evolve out of yourself. I think maybe there's no better path to serving customers that are different from you than just throwing some things out there and seeing what sticks.
I agree with that. That, I mean, that ties really well into, he mentioned it, I'm sure we've talked about it, we'll talk about it more, the idea of the product-led growth. And I think those big experiments, one thing we learned at OpenView's product-led growth conference is one important aspect of having a really good growth team is that safety to fail. You have to create an environment where people can do things and they may not always work, and that's going to be okay. And I think that's a lot of what he talks about with this retrospective, is that ideally not all of these things did actually work, because that means they're taking bigger and bigger bets. And I think that's a super important aspect of, like you said, building your intuition and even pushing beyond it.
Do you think that risk-taking is something that is universal for all growing SaaS product teams, or do you think that there's situations where it's appropriate and times where it's not?
I think it's part of your balanced portfolio, right? I mean, you shouldn't be working on all innovation at the same time. You've got bugs to fix, you've got sustaining to do. So I think it's kind of like how you have a mixed portfolio. You probably have a mixed set of experiments. You're probably testing big features, you're probably testing small enhancements. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think there's some industries where maybe it isn't so useful. I think if you're in some of these sort of specialized industries, like say healthcare or you know, biomedical devices or something like that, maybe running experiments with your product doesn't quite work, since there's such regimented processes. But I don't know, maybe there's something to be said about even in those challenging the status quo through your product by running experiments with how you serve your users.
Well, he talked too about how the startup users were always on the cutting edge of things. Like the fast growing startups, they want new things, they want to do something different, they're always willing to change. And so I think maybe pushing it with those users, maybe your early adopter users are the better ones to kind of push with. And like he said, that what Amplitude does is they take those learnings from the startups and they'll feed them to the enterprise and be a more thought leader in that way.
Yeah, that was a good point, because I could imagine a lot of people, as you move up scale, you ultimately in B2B SaaS almost like start small, or SMB, or however you define those smaller companies, have to move up to increase your revenue. But he does kind of give a different playbook than I've heard a lot, which is to still serve the startups in a different way, but he's even leveraging them in interesting ways. And I think that itself could be a principle that I think product managers could build off of, which is as you diversify the types of customers, maybe figure out, maybe they were early adopters, maybe it's the ones that are more, that have more of a stomach for trying new things, maybe utilize those always to kind of like keep pushing things forward. So to recap, the things that Justin said that we sort of found interesting were, one, tying product intuition to analytics is important. Even though they're building a product that's for product managers, he himself uses analytics to test out new things. And tied to that, secondly, at least where it makes sense, running experiments, taking risks with certain types of users or with your product is important, because it's how you help push your product forward.
Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. If you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Until then, visit innovatemap.com/podcast and subscribe to learn how you can take your product to the next level. As always, we're curious, what does better product mean to you? Hit us up on Twitter at InnovateMap, or shoot us an email at podcast@innovatemap.com.
I'm Christian.
And I'm Anna. And you've been listening to Better Product.
Better Product.
Drop mic.